what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart, they tell me.
Patricia T. O'Connor is here, author of a number of books on our language, for adults and for children. And we take your calls here at 212-433-9692 when Pat comes here. We also invite you to get in touch with her directly. You can email her at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. Or what you usually do is you send the thing to me and I forward it to her at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. But we get lots of interesting stuff through the mail as well as through the calls here. And we also, some people send in things on our listener comment line. But you have brought an idea this week about pears.
Yes.
You want to talk about pears?
Well, it's not entirely unnewsworthy, since the holiday shopping season is coming along and a lot of men are going to be getting their wives and girlfriends those little matched sets of panties and bra, you know, the kind that they usually get more as a present for themselves than for the girlfriends. But at any rate,
what are you saying about men there, Pat?
Well, I got a very interesting question from a male listener. He says, why does my wife put on a pair of panties but not a pair of bras? People say panties are plural because you're putting two legs into them. Forgive me, but aren't you putting two breasts into a bra? My wife accuses me of using this question as a ploy to get women to discuss their underwear. I hope you don't feel that way. Well, I'm willing to discuss anything for the greater good of the English language. And actually, this is a pretty interesting question, because before the invention of the modern bra, women wore what was called a bodice. And the OED describes this as an inner garment for the upper part of the body, often quilted or strengthened with whalebone or something like that. Now, this word bodice was originally plural because it started out as the word bodies, the plural of body. And the reason it was plural is because it consisted of two parts laced together. It laced in the back and it laced in the front, and it was two mirror image pieces that were laced together, so it was called bodies. And later on, that became bodice. And for many, many years, women referred to this garment either as a pair of bodies or a pair of bodice. And it wasn't plural because of the any nature of the breasts themselves, but because it was a two-part garment. And so that's why nowadays, women no longer put on a pair of bras. They put on simply a bra. It's a one-piece thing now.
But I have a pair of glasses on. Mm-hmm. It's a one-piece thing, really.
Yes.
And it not, you know, it is not all that different in some ways from a brassiere.
Right.
On the other hand, I have headphones on, and they have they're similar to the eyeglasses,
right,
but we do
ear.
Not call them a pair of headphones.
Don't you? You don't
No.
say a pair of headphones?
No, I don't.
Well, you would refer to them as they.
We say,
where
put,
are the
put
headphones?
On your headphones?
They
or
are.
Your, we'd
they
say
are
the cans,
there.
Actually, if you're an old-timer in the business.
Right.
Or otherwise,
but there,
you say headphones.
There are a lot of words that have a tuness about them that we refer to in the plural. Jeans, trousers, pants, things like scissors, tweezers, pliers, glasses, spectacles, anything that has a tuness about it. Often will have, it'll be plural and be referred to in the plural.
And I've always wondered about scissors, because it's not the same as glasses, which function as two separate things for two eyes. Scissors are really, they don't make any sense unless you have these two things that are useless individually.
Well, they are two things that are useless individually wired together, but it's like pliers or tweezers. If you just separated the two parts, they'd be useless.
Yeah, well, I don't want to call them a pair of tweezers either. Where are the tweezers? Isn't that enough?
Yes, that's enough.
What we're saying is that the English language is inconsistent. Is this true in other languages as well? If I were French, would I be talking about a pair of glasses, a pair of scissors, a pair of brassieres?
Well, no. In France, women don't wear what is called a brassiere. Brassiere doesn't mean brassiere in French. It means something like a baby's undershirt. Mm-hmm. A brassiere in French is a soutien gorge. This
but we
is
don't
a long
have a
story.
Pair of soutien gorge.
No, it's just a simple, solid garment. But they don't use the word brassiere.
Well, they don't use a lot of words that we use that sound.
Exactly.
They actually have the same word, and the British are the same.
Uh-huh.
If you say suspenders in America, you are talking about something men put, some men use instead of a belt.
Right.
And if you talk about suspenders in England, you're talking about a garter belt.
Yeah,
that only a woman would wear.
Right, and suspenders there are braces.
Yes,
correct.
But braces here are things that you put on your teeth.
Right, right.
Our number here is, if you're calling in the United States, is 212-433-9692. How far do we take this, Pat?
Well, we take it to extremes, as usual. I do have one other thing that a lot of people might be interested in knowing about. I get emails now and then about the word "nother," as in a whole nother ball game. Mm. And someone recently asked me about it again. And a lot of people think that "nother" reflects a misunderstanding of the word "another."
Mm-hmm. An apostrophe, N-O-T-H-E-R.
Right. And in a sense, it does, but it's not exactly a misunderstanding because "another" actually was originally two words. It started out as an other, and it was sometimes written another.
Mm-hmm.
From about the 1200s into the 1600s, the word "nother" was used quite commonly to mean other, a second one, a different one. So the word "nother" used to be a bona fide word. People would speak, Chaucer, in fact, would speak of another lady or another, let me see, what's another, I don't have another citation here, but another horse or something. It used to be a bona fide word.
So this is a holdover from that time.
Yes, yeah.
Should we take some calls?
Yes, let's do.
My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, author of Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, You Send Me, Woe Is I, Jr. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And our number again, 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Danielle from New York City. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us, Danielle?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I love this program on the English language. I find it fascinating, and I can't wait for it to come on every time. My comment is you're talking about the word brassiere in French, and an interesting thing in German, it's called a Busenhalter, which literally means a breast holder.
Mm.
That
and
is so...
BH.
Isn't that prosaic?
It's practical. It's a practical approach to the word.
A breast
it's
holder?
A very practical language.
Yeah. Well, that's like saying breastplates, right? I mean, that's what the ancient Greeks used to wear, or some ancient people used to wear them.
They actually did wear garments that looked sort of like a latex kind of camisole. I mean, it was a tight thing for supporting the bosom.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for telling us that.
Thank you, too.
And we go now to Kevin from New Jersey. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there. I have a question about the use of the apostrophe.
Mm-hmm.
I just came from Macy's where I was trying to use a $10 off coupon, and the exclusion said excluding Levi's apostrophe S Dockers, and I was buying Levi's.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that the apostrophe meant that it was Dockers, not the jeans. And I said, your grammar teacher would be upset with you. You're denying my credit.
In other words, Levi's is the overall brand, and Dockers is the... It should have been Levi's, I guess, apostrophe. Levi's apostrophe Dockers.
Well, that would
if Levi's, necessary. But
Levi's apostrophe Dockers means they are excluding the Dockers, or they're excluding all Levi's, because Dockers are a brand of Levi.
Hmm.
It's a company.
I wouldn't think you'd really need an apostrophe at all.
mm-hmm.
couldn't be misunderstood, and it hardly seems...
So if you were excluding just the jeans, it would be Levi's with no apostrophe.
Yeah, I would think so.
So with an apostrophe in there means it's only the Docker brand of Levi's.
Well,
that's my case.
Are Dockers actually made by Levi Strauss?
It's made by Levi's, made and marketed by Levi's, by the company Levi Strauss.
I guess it would. I think just Levi's Dockers with no apostrophe would do it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling us.
Well, I'll take it to Macy's.
Now, since he's brought this up, I've always wondered about when I've seen ads or signs in windows of shops for bras, B-R-A apostrophe S. First, I thought, well, why are they talking about a possessive? And then I realized that that apostrophe probably should be there because we have taken out all those other letters between the A and the final S, and that's what apostrophes usually signify.
You mean since it's short for brassiere?
Yes.
But I think that bra has made it into the language now, and we no longer need that.
So I have to take that apostrophe out. When is the New Yorker going to take those little dots out of cooperate? Isn't that the same sort of thinking?
I think so. You have to take that up with the New Yorker.
We go now to Bill from Brooklyn. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hello. When I was going to school, I remember reading in Strunk or whatever it was that... composed of was correct, and composed and comprised of was wrong, and now it seems to be the other way around. Am I wrong, or what's going on?
No, you're right. Strictly speaking, to comprise means to include. So you wouldn't say included of. That's why you shouldn't say comprised of.
But wait a minute. Now we say...
Say composed of.
We'd only use the word composed of when we say the, now I'm trying to think of the
country.
The meal was comprised of an appetizer,
an
entree.
The meal comprised an appetizer and an entree, or it was composed of. Yeah.
But people are going to keep on making this mistake, aren't they?
Of course. And someday that distinction will be lost. I'm sure.
Yes, Bill.
Oh, hey, where did the word ramp up, the expression ramp?
That's a whole other question. That's a whole nother question.
A whole nother question. Right.
Should we talk about that some other time? Because we have a lot of calls.
Yeah, let's do.
Thank you for calling us.
I think we have talked about ramp before.
We have talked about ramp. Our number here, 1212. I add the one there because I'm trying to be helpful. 3-4. Now I have lost our number in my head. 433-9692. We do fundraising, we do all sorts of things that use different numbers here, and I get confused. We go now to Jill from Manhattan. Hi, Jill, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Patricia. I'm confused, too. It's okay. I've been hearing a lot of confusion about this. Myriad of anything or myriad? I was taught it was myriad, whether it be myriad bras or whatever.
I was, too. I was taught that myriad is an adjective. You use it like many, so you'd say myriad bras. But I am apparently out of date on that. People now say myriad of, as in... You'd use it like couple of.
So this is like comprised.
Yes.
Things are changing.
Things are changing, right?
Well, I used to insist
on that, but I'm an old fuddy-duddy now. So.
But, Jill, you can use it correctly.
And I won't be out of date or wrong?
No.
Thank you.
That is a situation. Just because everyone is using less instead of few, it doesn't mean that we all have to do it. And people will understand us when we say few, won't they?
Certainly.
Amy from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question about being a fuddy-duddy, too. I say culinary, like culinary arts, cooking.
Mm-hmm.
My 12-year-old says culinary, and it seems that all the food shows say culinary, but I know, Leonard, you say culinary, so I was using that as my defense, but I want to know.
No, don't ever trust me. I have been wrong in the past.
He's very seldom wrong. He's usually right. You were right on schism, and nobody says schism anymore. You, so that makes you one of a million.
I say fort as well.
Yes.
And nobody understands what I'm saying.
Okay, culinary can be either culinary or culinary.
Pick the one you like
best.
Yeah,
the particular dictionary I'm looking at right now has culinary listed first, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Well, yeah, but it is listed first.
Yes. You can tell yourself that. By the way, in case you're wondering, the same is true of coupon and coupon.
Yeah, and route and route.
Route and route.
Oh,
yes.
I thought that was regional, though, also. In New Jersey, it's always route.
Mm.
But other places, it's route. If you say route in New Jersey, you're showing your...
If you say Route 6, they won't know what you're talking about.
Well, they'll know you're not from New Jersey. That's for sure.
Well, I never got my kicks on Route 66.
Well, thank you so much.
We thank you for calling us, and we invite more calls here at 212-433-9692. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, who's written a number of books on the English language and joins us once a month to talk with you about this fabulous language of ours that's constantly changing, and we hope will never be codified to a point where it can't change. And we'll be back with your calls right after this. Thanksgiving is next week, and you're probably in the midst of planning your menu or what to bring to contribute to someone else's feast. If you want some ideas for great side dishes, well, check out the recipe swap I did with Ruth Reichel and some of our listeners last week. We have a link posted on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, whose latest book is in the final stages.
Mm-hmm. Right. Working on the index and
the
final
far.
Proofs. Yes.
Do we have a title?
Yes. Origins of the Specious.
Ah.
Myths and Misconceptions of the English Language. It's by me and Stuart.
Your husband, who
yes.
also collaborated with you on You Send Me.
Yes, and many other books, too. And
but you're breaking your three-word title rule.
Yes.
That's a great tradition.
I figure if you have a preposition in an article, they sort of add up to one word.
Our number here, 212-433-9692. We've got a number of messages that I'll read before we go to some more calls. Philip in Queens notes that in Russian, the word for clock, chassis, is plural, and his teacher told him that it was because a clock has many little wheels.
Oh,
isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
And Claire in New Paltz wants to know, why does it appear to be nearly impossible to refer to anything anymore? It seems like everyone now says to reference.
Oh, I know.
Is to reference incorrect?
Well, I haven't checked the dictionary, but I'm sure if it isn't correct now, it soon will be listed in forthcoming editions of dictionaries because it's so common, but I don't know where it comes from. It's a more complicated word. It's easier to say refer, I think. I don't know. Usually language gets simpler, but then there are words that become more complicated. Add a syllable or whatever, like orientate or preventative. So who knows?
A listener in Brooklyn works in fashion and says that calling a pair of jeans a jean or pants pant mm-hmm. is increasingly common.
I know. I always found that very strange when I would be, say, trying on a sweater and the salesperson would say, would you like to try a pant with that? And I would be thinking, you know, pant, 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 pant. it sounded very awkward to me. Like trouser, a jean, a pant, please. Mm.
But we have a pantsuit.
Pantsuit, right. But I think it's, don't you think it's short for pants suit rather than pant suit?
I have no idea. We are now speaking to Michael from Englewood.
Yes.
How are you, Michael?
I'm fine, thank you. My question is,
the use of myself, which everyone, it's really prevalent. I mean, people are saying things like, Bill and myself went to the park, mm-hmm. or they gave the money to Bill and myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that maybe because people are always confused about me and I, that they've just decided to forget me and I and just mm-hmm. use myself, and that covers everything. It's just very strange, and I hear it used by radio announcers and all sorts of people who should know better.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think it probably does have something to do with not knowing whether to finish the sentence with I or me. But it's ubiquitous. Everyone does it. Even our new president-elect, I noticed. But every president for since Reagan has referred to Nancy and myself.
Yeah, well, actually, Barack also does say Michelle and I.
Yeah, but he also says Michelle and myself.
Hmm.
So,
do you think that I sounds too egoistic to these people? Is that why?
I have no idea. I don't know. What does our caller think?
It's possible that I does. I mean, like, who's at the door? It's I. that would sound a bit affected.
Right, yeah.
But I think more it's because people are just so frightened of being caught with the wrong word, me or I.
Mm-hmm. So myself becomes the default.
Yeah, it's just default. But there's a case, as you were mentioning earlier, where something has actually become more complicated. The word has become more complicated, but the rule behind it
mm-hmm.
is simpler.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think default falls in... Oh, I'm going to make a bad pun. Forget it.
Oh, come on.
No, it was a Shakespearean pun, but I'm not going to do it.
Well, I would respond with one from Herodotus, but I'll keep it to myself.
Oh, really? You have a pun from Herodotus?
No. That was a bluff.
Oh, I was impressed. Our number here, 212-433-9692. Nick from Putnam County. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I believe I know the origin of the transition from refers to references.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it comes from the bloviation in the art criticism world. I read a lot of art criticism,
uh-huh.
and it's just amazing.
They have a lot to answer for, those art critics.
Oh, my God. It's so pretentious. And
that's because it's hard to write about something visual, so you have to do other things, don't you think?
Well, it's true.
It used to be mostly poets wrote art criticism, and they could bring some elegance to the form.
Well, if they're good, they can deliver poetry and elegance and erudition. But mm-hmm. often they just bring an inflated, bloated ego.
Yeah.
And they bloviate.
Except for Michael Kimmelman.
Oh, well, he's one of the exceptions.
Yes.
Too. And there are others who are really champions, but there mm-hmm. are a lot that just puff up their language just unnecessarily. Mm-hmm.
And they've been saying referencing?
Using references... Such and such a work of art references
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm. Picasso's this painting references that painting.
Yeah. Work references.
You know, another one is it informed. Something is informed by something else.
But, you know, art teachers do it as well. I remember many years ago I had a teacher who asked whether the work had plastic legitimacy. And... often asked that. That's why I remember. And a very famous artist who I studied with in grad school was the first person I ever heard use the word paradigm. And for at least three classes, I thought he was talking about 20 Cent. I had no idea what he was talking about.
Yeah, bravo.
Thank you so much for calling us. Should I give out the number again? It's 212-433-9692. Let's go now to Larry from Connecticut. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to make a comment about the singular and the plural when you were talking about objects. I think the object is a tweezer, and the object is a scissor, but you cannot talk about the object of a glass when referring to a pair of glasses. There are two lenses, two glasses, and when you have two halves of the tweezer making the tweezers, I just didn't quite follow all the rationalization for the distinction between those parts of speech.
Well, my confusion is if you have these two things that together make a pair of tweezers, you can't use them individually. You could use one eyeglass, but you can't use the half of the tweezers to make to do anything other than to maybe put a hole in a piece of paper.
And
when I'm asking my wife, honey, do you know where the tweezer is? I wouldn't say, honey, do you know where the tweezers are?
Well,
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I can't imagine where the tweezer is.
I think tweezers, scissors, pliers, all those are plural. If you're using scissor, I mean, I have seen scissor in recent years used as a singular, and I have noted that some people use tweezer, but I think those are probably somehow back formations. They're assuming that there's a plurality to the word and that there must be a singular legitimacy to using it as a singular. Which is an awkward way of saying what I meant, but I think they're essentially plural words. Tweezers, plural. Pliers, plural.
But actually what this gentleman is doing is what the person from the fashion industry said is happening
pant.
There as well.
Right, with pant.
And so more and more we're going to hear people saying, where is the tweezer?
Right.
Where is the scissor?
Yeah, I have seen singular scissor, but
when
I think
a kid,
that's a later formation.
When I was a kid, we said, where's the skizzer? And nobody understood what we were talking about. Matt from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well, Matt. What about
my
with you?
My question today is the word ironic versus ironical. It just is funny to me that the word ironical even exists when it means exactly the same thing as ironic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think there's a reason to use the word ironical, although I think it's a legitimate word these days.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think that's just an extra syllable that you don't need.
Right. I was wondering how it even came about.
Well, yeah. But there are others, and some go back a long time
before
I said egoistical,
mm-hmm.
and many people say egotistical,
mm-hmm.
And I guess they're both still usable,
mm-hmm.
But do we have any idea of why that is?
You mean why
an egoist or an egotist? Why ironic? Ironical?
Well, I know egoist and egotist have a separate meaning.
Oh, they do.
Yes, egoist is a philosophical term having to do with I can't remember exactly, but it has to do with the individual perception of what's around you. And egotist means everything seems to be filtered through the focus of you in
mm-hmm.
particular.
So I used it incorrectly before.
Yeah, I don't think they're the same thing.
Well, because there was a novel by Meredith, I think, called The Egoist, and I always thought, well, gee, maybe that just predates the use of the word egotist.
Maybe. And there was a perfume for a while called Egoist.
Mm.
Egoist.
Probably created by a philosopher.
Could be.
But why do you think we are saying ironical? I mean, I'm not.
I really don't know. I think people like to add syllables to things. Once they become overfamiliar, you add a syllable, it gives them a little something extra.
Mike from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
What do you want to talk about, Mike?
Yeah. Agenda and agendum. If you're in a meeting and there's a list, isn't that an agenda? Agendum? Sorry.
Well, the word agenda began life as a plural, and it meant items on a list. So your agenda were all these things that you had to do. Over time, it became a singular for the list itself rather than the items on the list. So nowadays, even though the original agendum, Latin, was singular and agenda was plural, in modern English, agenda is singular. It means the item on a list, items a list full of items rather than the items on a list. Or it means a program.
Okay, so it is acceptable.
Yeah.
And we've done the same thing with data or data, depending on how you pronounce
that. Right, right. You know, another word a lot of people don't realize started out as a plural is stamina. It started out as a scientific term, and it meant the forces or the whatever in the human body that all added up to give it its life force. You would say, his stamina are very strong.
Ooh, nobody then, would say that now.
No, and then later it became a singular, meaning strength.
Yeah, he has a lot of stamina.
Right.
And we would never say he has a lot of staminas.
No.
Which is what we are really saying.
Right. Insignia also used to be a plural. It meant marks, different symbols.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it written as a plural.
As, you have?
Yeah.
He has many insignia on his jacket.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see that we're, you might still run across that.
There's always somebody.
Uh-huh.
Christine from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I actually had a question about two words. One is a very common everyday word. People say it all the time. That would be anyway. It's turned into anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. I don't know why. The other word would be irregardless, which I know isn't a word.
Mm-hmm.
We've dealt with irregardless in the past, but I am hearing anyways more and more.
I'm not sure why. It may have some... There may be some mental parallel.
Mayor Bloomberg
says anyways. There may be a sort of a parallelism with the word always. Or you will hear people say, we have a ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it has something to do with that trend.
It's very frustrating only because I know it's wrong, and when I tell somebody it's wrong, they don't believe me. Because it's so commonplace now, it's popular.
Do you tell people that they're pronouncing a word wrong?
Well, I try and tell them, you know, like, anyways, isn't really a word. I try and help them along with that because, you know, it's not a word and I'd rather it not be so popular.
And how do they respond?
Do they punch you in the nose?
No. They just tell me that I'm wrong.
They say, get a life, you know.
I've been caught in that bind, whether I should correct people or not. If it's your child, I think you have to correct. But otherwise, what I try to do, if it's really something that bothers me, is to use the word correctly in a sentence afterward.
Mm-hmm.
So the other person will hear the way I'm using it. And because often I will hear a scientist pronounce something in a certain way, even though I thought it was pronounced differently, and then I just pick it up. They've dropped the hint to me that it's pronounced this way, not that way, and I will pronounce it the other way from then on. And I think that I'm doing the other person a favor by doing the same thing, but I would never imagine saying to somebody, oh, anyways is not a word, don't use it. What about you, Pat?
Well, I don't do that unless I'm invited to, but I invite people to correct me.
Meanwhile, we have a way for you to get in touch with Pat when she's not here. You can email her at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. You can go to grammarphobia.com and click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. She'll be back on December 17th. Look forward to seeing you then. And meanwhile, people can read all your books. They're all available at Amazon and all the bookstores, aren't they?
Mm-hmm, they are.
Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.
On tomorrow's show, Jonathan Alter, editor and columnist for Newsweek magazine, on witnessing some of the biggest news events in the last 25 years, from the collapse of communism in the Soviet Union to being on the ground in New Orleans after Katrina. Also, former SNL writer Alan Zwiebel on his funny new book, Clothing Optional, Stuart Onan on his new novel, Songs for the Missing, plus our latest underreported. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Stephen Valentino. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Paula Crossfield, Alex Ambrose, Julia Corcoran, and Heather DeLeo. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I am Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening.